Hey, this is former WWE wrestler and ECW original, The Blue Meanie, and you're listening to just another wrestling podcast. So listen to what else.
It's time for another wrestling podcast.
The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at
the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
They got the answers. I changed the question.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better.
These are the best in the world, brother. These are the best at what they do.
When we talk about the legends of the sport, there's only two in my book.
Another wrestling podcast.
Another wrestling podcast. Now can you dig that, sucker?
All right. This is another wrestling podcast. I'm Jonathan Benjamin.
And I'm Steve Credo. Jonathan, did you just take my intro?
Well, we'll get into that in a little bit, but Steve, I just wanted to talk to you a little bit. I'm back from my triumphant return to the great state of Indiana. I'm now back with you here in the Northeast, and we've got a lot going on. We've got a lot to talk about. Some
like
great
stealing
shows.
My intro. That was my gimmick.
You really need to just let that go. This is episode number 95. Who would have thunk it? We have a very special guest on the show today, Steve, who will be joining us at another wrestling podcast.
Straight from the BWO, the blue guy, the Blue Meanie, is going to be joining us a little bit later on the show, so stay tuned for that one. Definitely a not-miss interview.
No, it's going to be a really great show today. We've got a lot to talk about, like I said. We are on the road to WrestleMania, as they say, as the kids say these days. But this Sunday, live on the WWE Network, we have WWE Fastlane. Now, what are your thoughts on this pay-per-view in general? And let's talk a little bit about what's going on this Sunday.
Yeah, Jonathan, you know, it's the in-betweener pay-per-view. It used to be the Elimination Chamber. They got rid of it because of maybe too many injuries. Where you see the joke in that one, but now it's Fastlane. It's the year number two for Fastlane. In all honesty, Jonathan, as a wrestling fan, you almost don't need this pay-per-view, man. You could go from the Rumble to WrestleMania without a pay-per-view in between, but we're still gonna get a pay-per-view in between. It has a few good matches, but nothing crazy that would take away from the next pay-per-view being WrestleMania. I think your biggest match of the night is going to be that main event with Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, and Dean Ambrose. I have a few ideas what would happen, but what do you think is going to happen, Jonathan? Is this clearly the stepping stone for WrestleMania now?
I think that this pay-per-view really has no pizzazz, no
testicular
panache.
Fortitude?
Yeah, sure. What bothers me about it is that now's the time to really be building up WrestleMania. It is 40-some-odd days away, and we don't know anything about The Undertaker. We don't really know anything about these matches. The only thing that we will know after this pay-per-view is who will face Triple H. And if we know anything about the world of wrestling, that can even change. So I'm looking forward to this match, but what I'm afraid of is with Brock versus Roman versus Dean, the fans are definitely going to boo somebody, and who are they going to boo? It's pretty obvious they're going to go after Roman. So, yeah. If that's your match, if Roman wins, as I would predict that he does, if Roman wins, then at WrestleMania it's going to be Triple H versus Roman, and who are they going to boo then? And
I know, it's a lose-lose situation again for poor Roman Reigns.
Yeah, I mean, unless they're thinking about turning him heel at WrestleMania, and I know that is talked about all the time. It's turning, but I don't know if turning Roman heel is going to do anything. I don't even know how it would be done, but I'm a little nervous. But they always pull it off, and I'm looking forward to WrestleMania. What are your thoughts on this match?
Yeah, Jonathan, a few weeks ago on Raw, you had Triple H backstage with Brock Lesnar. Now, I'll tell you what, you know, when you think WrestleMania, you think, you know, big matches, big, you know, larger-than-life matchups. And I'll tell you what, man, out of seeing Brock Lesnar go face-to-face with Triple H, you know, I'm like, I know we saw it at WrestleMania 29, but it wasn't for the championship. And I don't know, man. When I saw that, I was like, right there, that's your match, Brock versus Triple H. And then what do you do to get, you know, because right now you have, you know, the Brotherhood or whatever you want to call them of Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns. What do you do with them? How do you get this, you know, how do you get Brock winning this out of them? This is just me, you know, of course something else is going to happen, but this is just my wishful thinking, to where you do have Roman turn heel against Dean Ambrose or Dean Ambrose turn heel against Roman Reigns. And then that would be another WrestleMania match right there. Dean Ambrose versus Roman Reigns in what, for what? I don't know, but I don't know, man. I think that's the only way you're going to save Roman Reigns. Like from what you said, from the booze, because if you have him fight Dean Ambrose as a heel or as a face, I don't know. I think it's a better situation for his career than having him go against Triple H, and just, I don't know. You know, it's just one of those situations where I think a Brock versus Triple H for the championship would be ideal. I know they really want Triple H versus Roman Reigns, but at the same time, you know, like you just said, man, what will a crowd do? And that's the crowd of crowds. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and, you know, we look back in our past here, in 2015 is when we saw Sting challenge Triple H for the match at WrestleMania. So I'm hoping that we get some big moments out of Fastlane just to help push along WrestleMania. And another big match that we have is the new Intercontinental Champion for the second time now, Kevin Owens versus Dolph Ziggler. Now, this has the potential to steal the show, as most Dolph Ziggler matches have. So I'm looking forward to this. I really like the Intercontinental Championship, and I kind of wish that it would be brought back to its former glory so people would be able to see that as kind of the stepping stone to the World Heavyweight Championship. Now, I definitely see Kevin Owens walking away with this one again. What are your thoughts on this match?
Yeah, man, like you said, that IC Championship needs to shine. It needs another nice match at WrestleMania. Last year we had, you know, kind of like that Money in the Bank match for the IC Championship, which Daniel Bryan won. I hope it's not a ladder match. I'd just like to see a nice one-on-one match this year, you know, for the championship. You know, save that ladder match maybe for the United States Championship or something. I don't know. But, you know, I think Kevin Owens deserves it. He's had one hell of a year. This is going to be his first WrestleMania. So, I mean, out of anything, I do not want to see him lose. Dolph doesn't need the IC Championship. I think this would be a great spot for not only the IC Championship to shine, but also Kevin Owens. And regardless of whatever happens in the main event, this will lead into the next big feud for the championship. And maybe, I don't know how long it'll take or whatnot, but hell, I'd even say have the champion versus the IC champion at SummerSlam, title for title, making SummerSlam even more bigger. And what better match would be than Kevin Owens, IC champion, versus Roman Reigns or Dean Ambrose or whoever's going to win it? I don't know. But I mean, at the end of the day, this is probably going to be one of the best matches of the night. Even at WrestleMania. So who knows what's going to happen with it, but it's great, man. A lot of people are knocking Fastlane like I just knocked it before, but you know, I think it's going to be a nice little stepping stone this Sunday.
I think it's going to be a nice little stepping stone this Sunday.
I thought you were yawning at how bored you were with Fastlane.
I thought you were yawning with how bored that you were with Fastlane.
Oh, so yeah, let's go back to this, because, you know, as you're copying me now, you stole my gimmick. All right. From the top of the show, Jonathan. And that's how you do it, you know, a little pizzazz right there. But what'd you do, man? Why'd you steal it?
Let's talk about how you stole that from Dazed and Confused, but that's neither here nor there.
Art imitating life, or, you know, art. Okay, isn't it a flattery to steal or to copy something, to imitate something?
Sweet Jesus, it's imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
That's why you're here, Jonathan, for those moments right there, because I don't know what I was saying, but yeah, it's something like that. You know what I mean?
It's, Yeah, I do know what you mean, and that's what we're going to talk about today, how that may not always be the case in professional wrestling. We have the Blue Meanie joining us right now, who is known for being part of the BWO. Now, the BWO spoofed the ginormous mega stable, the NWO. But this isn't the only time that superstars have impersonated other superstars. So I think it's fitting that today we talk about some of the worst wrestling impersonations and maybe our favorite or favorite bad impersonations.
U-S-O-G. That's right. Son of a gun. You made this into one big segue.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what I did.
That's probably had to be the biggest segue ever in the show to get to the topic.
That's what I do. Well, Steve, we're going to get right into this because over the years, we've had a lot of – it's almost a rite of passage for some of these people. I remember when Shawn Michaels was making fun of Bret Hart and out came a little Bret Hart. We've had Booker Wee. We've had all different kinds of people dress up to somewhat – get under the skin of their opponent that they're feuding with at the time. Or maybe it's completely unrelated. But who comes to mind whenever we start talking about wrestling impersonations? Who are some of the people that come to mind as maybe they definitely missed the mark? They weren't that great at their impersonation.
Right off the top when you said not that great, unfortunately, I think that's going to have to go to the man himself, Gilbert, who – at the end of the day, made me laugh when he came out, but it was short-lived. The damn man even won the light heavyweight championship, but it was kind of ridiculous. It was still funny, but it was like, all right, you know, you're not really gonna make much of a mark here with it. But Gilbert would definitely stand out on that one for me.
Well, it was just announced today that the WWE is going to have a World Cruiserweight Series. Maybe we see Gilbert make a return for that.
Oh, man. Is Hornswoggle going to defend his championship that they got rid of?
Wow, that's a good question. You know, I think that there was some merit to Gilbert. I can't believe I'm even saying that.
Merit. The man has merit now.
Yes, yes. Was it a spot-on impersonation? No. But, you know, Gilbert came out to the Sparklers, and instead of who's next, he chanted who's first. So, you know, I don't think it was the worst, but I can see where somebody would get that impersonation. Or who would get that impression, I guess I should say.
Sure.
But, you know, as far as worse, I'm thinking maybe some of the people who maybe poked fun at somebody instead of, you know, Gilbert did that, but he wasn't really going for the personal attack, I guess. But the one that really bothers me was when, and it's been talked about to death, the NWO as the Four Horsemen. And I don't know if you remember that Arn Anderson pretty much had to announce his retirement similar to Daniel Bryan or any of these people. And then the NWO came out a week later and really made fun of it. And Kevin Nash was Arn Anderson. And I remember X-Pac or Sean Waltman at the time was Flair. Conan was Steve Mongo McMichael. And Buff Bagwell was Kurt Hennig. And I felt like it was a little bit of, you know, bad taste. It would almost be like if somebody came out during Daniel Bryan's retirement speech and, you know, came out with a neck brace on or, you know, was faking a head injury or whatever. It was too close to home, I think. And, you know, Kevin Nash has definitely said that he apologized for the whole thing. And it was a little bit bad taste, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I want to remind everybody, too, out there, as we're talking about this, guys, girls, and whoever else is out there, anotherwrestlingpodcast.com, tweet us at @awrestlingpod, or Facebook us on Another Wrestling Podcast. Leave your comments. Tell us, you know, some of the memories you had of some of the greatest impersonations that maybe didn't – maybe they just fell flat, in your opinion. Got to remind you out there, too, just to, you know – we want to hear your thoughts too. Jonathan, going back though, thinking about all these impersonations and whatnot, I have to bring up the fake Diesel and fake Razor Ramon. I thought these guys were going to have 15 minutes, but they had a little bit longer than 15 minutes, and one actually had a lengthy career after that. But what was your thought when they did the whole fake Diesel and Razor Ramon thing? Because they even teased it on Raw that, you know, Razor Ramon is returning, and meanwhile, while he's on WCW as Scott Hall, you know, what did you think was going to happen that night?
You know, I didn't know, because this was around the time when the Monday Night Wars were really kind of hot and heavy. The internet wasn't as big as it is today, and people didn't have all the answers. And so whenever I heard that, you know, Diesel and Razor were back, I was like, man, that was short-lived. These guys were just on WCW. It's going to be great that they're back, because I really enjoyed both of them. But as you mentioned, Diesel was played by none other than Glenn Jacobs, who you probably all know as Kane. But it was terrible. It was horrible. I remember they kind of pumped it up the whole show. Jim Ross was talking about it or whatever. And when they came out, I mean, up until the moment that they pretty much stepped into the ring, I was still thinking, man, there's hope. They're back. These guys are back. But it was terrible.
And like I said, it didn't even last for 15 minutes. Man, I saw them at a house show in Poughkeepsie. They were on the card wrestling that night, so it wasn't like, hey, we're just gonna bring you out. It's gonna be make a little fun. They put them on the road, Jonathan. And they were wrestling on the road as Diesel and Razor. So I thought that was even more ridiculous than what they did with them.
Well, they were literally. I had like a 5-month span, I think. Their last match was the 97 Royal Rumble. And, you know, I think this was one of those points where Vince was just so upset with what was happening that it was probably a little bit to try to gain viewers back, but it was also probably to show that they weren't as important as they thought they were or whatever. But it really didn't do anybody any favors. Probably if there was a WWE time machine, this is probably one of those things that would have not happened.
Sure. Well, tell me a little bit more. I mean, some of the worst impersonations, because I think a little bit later on we could probably talk about maybe some of the best ones. But while we're talking about some of the worst, who else is on your plate, if you will?
I'm going to say the worst one that I've ever seen in my life was the Oklahoma. It was when Ed Ferrara was in WCW at the time, and he was making fun of Jim Ross. I mean, there was no bones about it. It was absolutely him making fun of it. They tried to mock his mannerisms and stuff due to his Bell's palsy, and I know that it made a lot of people mad. A lot of wrestling fans were mad at the time. And, you know, I know that I've had read interviews, I've listened to interviews from both Ferrara and Vince Russo, who was the one that was kind of pushing for it, and I know that they apologized, but still, you know, whenever you watch the network or you watch some of this stuff, it's one of the worst, and it was just mean,
yeah.
Like I said, you know, and at this point, Jim Ross's kids are watching this, or family, and it's just... It was just – there was no reason for it. I understand that all is fair in love and war, but this even seemed just out of line.
And you bring up a good point too, because let me ask you this too. So with all these fake impersonations, some of these horrible ones, do you think it's even worth it? I mean, is it just a big F you to the guy who either left – such as like Diesel or Razor, that we don't need you. We'll just, you know, make somebody else Diesel and Razor. Or how do you feel? Like, how do you think they felt? Or, you know, like, why even do it? Why even acknowledge it? Or, you know what I mean? What's your thought on that? Like, I mean, at the end of the day, is it just a big F you, or should they have even, you know, talked about it or brought it up that they were gone? Is it just being bitter about it now, or what?
Well, it's weird because like some of them that we talked about Gilbert. We talked about fake Diesel and Razor, and we talked about Oklahoma so far. Those were all due to, you know, Gilbert was a direct relationship to Goldberg. Oklahoma to Jim Ross, fake Diesel and Razor to real Razor and Diesel. You know, this was battle, I guess, is the reasoning behind that. But there's some, you know, like in the NWO Mocking the Four Horsemen, that was within the own, their own company.
Yeah.
So it's weird to me that you would, because it makes one look weak and one look stronger. You know what I mean? Like the Four Horsemen, probably in a lot of fans' eyes, because this was back in the time when the NWO was really cool and everybody liked them. The Four Horsemen, that is a historic and monumental stable, was made to look, you know, weak and foolish. So I don't know sometimes why they would do that in their own company. And we had that with, you know, we've had fake Undertakers, we've had fake Canes, and it never really came across as something, at least with the fake Undertaker gimmick that they had. That was when Ted DiBiase went out and said that he found the Undertaker and all that stuff. So there was at least some storyline correlation and stuff. But
yeah, I would even almost mark that up under the good impersonations, to where it was almost, you know, it wasn't so much as making fun of it as, if I could take you back, if you will, of the Nacho Man and the Hulkster, to when they left the Huckster. That's right. I know. What am I talking about? the Huckster. That was totally like, F you. Like, you guys are old anyway. We don't need you anymore. But at the end of the day, still, it's like, why even acknowledge it? It's just being bitter, though.
Yeah. It was... It's one of those things, I guess, that it's Vince or Bischoff at the time had the final say in probably anything that was going on. So it was all brought to them through creative, and then they said yes or no to it. So
sure.
The buck stops with them, and it was a very strange time in the history of professional wrestling. And a lot of people said that, you know, like I said earlier, all's fair in love and war. So at the time, it probably seemed like a good idea, a way to grab some attention from the viewers. But in hindsight, I would assume that a lot of people would say that these were probably some of the worst things that they could have done.
That's right. But Jonathan, you know, like I said, once again, if you're listening out there, tweet us, Facebook us, let us know your thoughts. Who are some of your, you know, these impersonators, if you will, which one were just so horrible to you? Let us know. Create a clever hashtag. I don't know. Surprise us. Just tweet us or Facebook us. Let us know, and we'll read the best responses. We'll interact with you guys. That's what we want to hear, so let us know. Jonathan, though, we got to get right to it. You know, the blue guy is here, and we're going to talk a little bit about the BWO in a little bit, but he's here right now, so let's welcome the Blue Meanie. Joining us right now is a man who defied the odds and lived out his dream. He has wrestled all over the world. He's an ECW original, a former WWE wrestler, a trainer, and one-third of the infamous BWO. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Blue Meanie.
Hey, well, thanks for having me on the show. How you doing?
Doing great, man. Thank you so much for joining us. You know, we're going to talk a little bit later about on April 16th, the Icons of Wrestling down in Philadelphia. We'll get into that a little bit. But, you know, let's get right into it. If we start a little bit at the beginning, how did you initially become a fan of the sport that we all love, pro wrestling?
It's very simple. I was just, you know, I was a 7-year-old kid channel surfing, and a friend of mine was, you know, I invited my friend out. I was like, hey, let's go down to the park and, you know, play whatever. And he's like, I can't, I'm watching wrestling. I said, what's wrestling? And I went to his house and we watched it. And the main event was Rick Martel and Tony Garea losing the tag belts to Mr. Fuji and Mr. Saito. And from that then on, I was hooked. Yeah, I don't remember the matches before that, but I remember, you know, the main event and it being a title change and it's important, and everything about it just made me fall in love with it. So, I mean, I was like, that's it. I'm hooked.
Sure.
How did you translate that fandom into a career in the wrestling business?
Just, it's something I've always wanted to do, and, when I, you know, got into high school, I started, you know, reading the newsletters like Dave Meltzer's and Wade Keller's, and there was ads for wrestling schools, and then there was one for Al Snow's school, and there was one for Malenko School, and when I was playing with the person from there, they also represented Al Snow, And the economics of it, you know, Alstead School won. But to me, it was just the best choice I probably could have ever made, just because Al was just, like a big brother. You know, he's such a great trainer. Not saying Malenko's wasn't, but, you know, I think my career ended up a little bit better just because of the connection I made with Al, not only as a trainer, but as a human being. Mm-hmm. To this day, we're still best friends, and we still text each other, Rain and Salinas, each and every day. He's the big brother I never had. Mm-hmm. So when I went there, he was patient, and I don't want to say meticulous, but you know, he made sure I knew step A before I went to step B, and not only did he teach me the stuff in the ring, but outside the ring, and mentored me in pretty much every aspect of life.
Sure. Now, like you said, fast forward a little bit. You've been training potential wrestlers for quite a while. Which do you think is harder, training to become a pro wrestler or training people to become pro wrestlers?
Well, it's not all me. I got to give credit to the rest of the staff at the Monster Factory, the current and new owner, Danny Cage, who's owned it since 2010, 2011. Him, Bill Wells, myself. There's also, player coaches, I'd like to say, and QT Marshall and Punisher Martinez, who's doing great stuff at Ring of Honor right now. We're like a five-headed monster. And to answer your question, sometimes it's harder to teach it because, growing up, I think I pretty much had I don't want to say I knew it all or everything like that, but now you watch, when you watch it as much as I watch it, and I watched it a lot, and pick up on little nuances and stuff like that, I kind of picked up on stuff quicker. So when I go to teach somebody and they totally don't do it the way it's intended to be done, it can be frustrating, but, you got to start somewhere.
Sure.
And, that's the cool thing about us. We have five different coaches, five different philosophies, five different styles. And, it all comes together. In this business, you're never going to truly learn from one person.
Sure.
I'm a bit of a nut myself. Al Snow broke me in, but I trained with, Dory Funk, Tom Pritchard. And then, everybody in the ECW locker room, from Tracy Smothers, Tommy Dreamer, Tommy Rogers, anybody who would, Shane Douglas, anybody who would pull a guy aside and say, hey, that was great, but next time do this. Bam Bam Bigelow was a big influence on me, and he helped me in the ECW locker room. So, and that's the good thing about the Monster Factory, is five different heads, five different brains to pick, and, throw it in a bowl and mix it all together.
Now, you've had a long career despite not looking like the typical professional wrestler. Did you ever feel pressure at any point in your career to look a certain way?
Sure. I guess everybody, especially watching the 80s stuff with the big guys, big muscle guys. But, in hindsight, I don't think I would have gotten a chance had I not looked the way I looked. Mm-hmm. I got it because they needed a lovable fat sidekick to the whole concept was a lackey to a lackey. So Stevie was Raven's lackey, and I had to be his lackey. And he tried to dress like Raven, but he said he wore half shirt and Daisy Dukes, so to make it even more absurd. Here's this fat guy in a half shirt and Daisy Dukes. So if I had looked like, Charles Atlas or whatever that bodybuilder cartoon was, I don't think I would have got the job. I think I just would have, got lost in the shuffle and been like every other guy.
Sure.
So, luckily I was, being a big guy, and I like to consider myself agile and inspired by guys like Bam Bam Bigelow. I think that was my in. That was my hook.
Sure.
If I had any other choices, I wouldn't change anything, really.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, early on as a fan, who were some of your favorite wrestlers, you know, growing up? Did you have any, like, top five?
I mean, like I said, I mentioned Bigelow, Dr. Death, Steve Williams, Great Buddha, Terry Taylor. Growing up, people come up to me and say ECW was, their favorite promotion. For me, it was still watch UWF. I was a big fan of WWE, don't get me wrong. That was, the drug that hooked me was, WWF. But, then you see something as different as Bill Watch UWF.
Yeah.
And it was just episodic television that when it ended, I was already craving for the next week's show. And, don't talk to me, don't say anything to me. I'm sitting in front of the TV, tunnel vision, staring at the screen, That was my favorite.
Sure. Now, as you started your wrestling career, did you feel that some of those may have changed as you started to learn more about the business, as far as, maybe guys that you looked up to growing up? Maybe did you change your mind on some of your favorites? Or
no, just because, there's so many. My tastes change. It doesn't mean I stop liking one thing. It just means at any particular time I'm in the mood for something else.
Sure.
My favorite band of all time is Van Halen. Eddie Van Halen, to me, is the greatest guitar player in the world. But sometimes I'll be in a Pearl Jam mood, or sometimes I'll be in a Smashing Pumpkins mood, or a Black Crowes mood, or a Slayer mood.
Yep.
Depends on, what mood I am when my feet hit the floor.
Sure,
yep. When I watch wrestling, I could be in the mood for a brawl. I could be in a mood for, purely scientific match. I could want to watch Bruiser Brody, and the next minute I want to watch the Malenkos against the British Bulldogs in All Japan. So, who knows? That's why I get a specific answer.
Sure, yeah.
It could tomorrow, if you change a bit, somebody go, oh, well, I thought you said, well, yeah, I thought that today. So, but growing up, all my influencers were my influences, and they're people I borrowed from, and their armor into my armor, sure. so to speak.
Now, you are arguably most known for your time in ECW. Did you personally feel like you had made it once you joined the ECW locker room?
I don't know if I made it. I teach this to all the kids at the Monster Factory. Life is just like going to school. You might be the coolest kid in grade school, but once you graduate eighth grade and go to high school, you have to start over and you're a freshman. Mm-hmm. So you go through high school, and then you become the cool senior, and you're the captain of the football team and most popular. But guess what? You graduate, and then you go to college, and then you're a freshman in college. Then you can, become the cool senior in college, and you're getting all these, scholarships and stuff like that, or you're getting all these chances, and you say you graduate college, you go to the NFL. Okay, now you're a rookie in the NFL, and you're carrying somebody's bags, and they're ribbing you and stuff like that. And then the pro wrestling business is a constant series of paying dues and repaying dues over and over again. So, I was fortunate enough. I was only in the business like a year and a half before ECW, and I might have done good on indies, but once I get to a company that has TV and they have certain standards and, they're standards and ethics just like the wrestling business, but I had to, reprove myself. I had to reprove myself in that locker room. Just the way, when I went to WWE, I had to reprove myself in the WWE locker room. You just can't walk into a situation going, oh, I'm the king here. I'm the hot stuff, I'm the flavor, the whatever.
Yeah.
It's just about being humble and earning trust within the locker room and, just establishing yourself as a credible asset.
Sure. Shortly after joining ECW, you were part of something that was only meant to be a small part of the show. You, along with Stevie Richards and Nova, formed the BWO. Are you surprised that after all these years, the fans still remember the BWO so fondly?
Oh, it's amazing. This November will be the 20th anniversary. And we're still out there doing it, I couldn't have been happier with the BWO and happier with the people I did it with, with Stevie and Nova And like I said, it was supposed to be a one-night deal, and the fans picked up on it, and, you know, Paulie and Todd heard the crowd reaction the first night and said, hey, we got something here, and it became a vehicle for Stevie's, you know, singles push towards the heavyweight title. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he main evented the, you know, first ever ECW pay-per-view. You know, he was the, you know, co-main event, and me and Stevie had to be in his corner. I mean, Nova had to be in Stevie's corner. So, you know, there's not too many firsts in this business, you know, and the BWO allowed us to do, you know, that first, and it still allows us to, you know, get together every couple months and, you know, go out there and do what we love to do.
Sure, definitely.
In the BWO, you were the blue guy, which was obviously a spoof on Scott Hall. Have you ever talked with Scott about your sincerest form of flattery?
Yeah, I mean, all those NWO guys love the BWO. They knew what it was, and they appreciated it. And in ECW, Scott Hall did like two dates, and I saw him, and I was like, hey man, I hope you don't mind. Told the BWO, he's like, oh no, he said, you know, he would rib, you know Kevin Nash. He would say, you know, hey, you know, since that's the blue world order and the blue meanie's playing me, I should be the leader of the NWO. And, you know, they would just rib each other. And, you know,
sure.
Well, I first saw first met, you know, X-Pac in WWE, when we were both in WWE, I was like, hey man, they didn't mind. He's like, no, they loved it. And so, yeah, it was cool that, you know, you do a spoof of something. You know, we were like the Weird Al of wrestling.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
You know, it was all, you know, the fans take it for what they want to take it for, but it was all meant to be respect from our end.
Sure. Now, after some time in ECW, you went on to wrestle in the WWE. As a fan of the business, how did it feel to make it to arguably the biggest wrestling company in the world?
Oh, I mean, it was just like, you made it, you know. I made it. I mean, I saw the prove myself once, you know, they hired me. But, I mean, that's the promotion that made me fall in love with wrestling in the first place. Mm-hmm. And to me, it was just them paying me back for all the money I spent on the product. You know, just, sure. It was a dream come true. You know, I still have my contract to this day. You know, I have a little keepsake. And, it's cool. I got to go back in 2005, and then they asked me and Stevie, along with Joey Styles, to host ECW Unreleased Volume 3. You know, they brought me up to the studios. We, you know, filmed a bunch of stuff, and, you know, I mean, it's just been fantastic. You know, there's a reason why they're the best company, the biggest and best company in the world. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's even harder to get in nowadays, but, you know, to get back in. I'm very fortunate to say I worked for ECW during their hottest period. I got to work, you know, in WWE during one of their hottest periods with the Attitude Era.
Definitely.
So, I've been very fortunate.
Sure. And as we mentioned earlier, that you are training wrestlers at the Monster Factory. What do you think sets the Monster Factory apart from some of the other wrestling schools out there?
The determination of the owner, Danny Cage, is awesome. He is one of the most motivated people I've ever met. Danny Cage, not only, you know, he wrestled. He's a Monster Factory alum. He did amateur wrestling. Our other co-trainer, Bill Wiles, he's a Monster Factory alum. He did amateur wrestling. T. Marshall trained at the Monster Factory. He did amateur wrestling. Punisher Martinez, I'm sure he did, you know, that as well. So you got four minds for, you know, both, you know, who trained at the Monster Factory, who did amateur wrestling. So they're pretty well steeped in, you know, conditioning. Mm-hmm. You know, we do a lot of, you know, circuit training, stuff like that. You know, the reason why the Monster Factory is the best school in the country is, or even the world, you know, we're part of the Paulsboro Amateur Wrestling Club. So on one side of the building, we have all amateur wrestling. the other side, we've got two rings. We have a full weight room in the building itself, full facilities. And now we also have a second building called the Muscle Factory Recruitment Center, which is part of another company that also does boxing and mixed martial arts. So we have two buildings, two schools, and it's a fantastic place to, you know, get your feet into the business, because you guys, you know, such great trainers, such great minds, you know, and such great connections. I mean, so in this business, that's what it's about as well. So the Moss Factory is probably, I mean, it's definitely one of the, you know, there's a couple great schools in this country, and we always acknowledge schools like, you know, the 3D Academy, Lance Storm, you know, and you know, all the other, you know, some of the other schools, because you need to have a network of, you know,
sure, yep,
good schools, because, you know, sometimes we'll bring in trainers from other schools, we'll bring in you know, Les Thatcher or something like that, to show our students, you know, and we go, hey, critique what we're teaching. And, you know, to this day, you know, people still, you know, we have endorsements from everybody, from, you know, Les Thatcher to Ring of Honor. So, and, you know, and everybody else who's, we've had in for a seminar. So, and guys like Rick Rogers, you know, the great Rick Rogers, who's one of the most respected trainers in this business, one of the best minds in this business. He, you know, we have a great relationship with him as well. So, and 3D Academy and stuff like that. So, yeah, definitely. If you want to, you know, break in the right way, go to MossFactory.org and see what we're about.
The Blue Mini's popularity seems to have only gotten bigger over the years. Are you excited to have your very own action figure? And what can you tell us about that process?
Well, I mean, it's so overwhelming. You know, for a while there, you know, it hadn't even dawned on me that I had never had my own action figure.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and then I had seen that the wonderful company, Figures Toy Company, is putting out a line of Ring of Honor figures and independent wrestlers. So I hit him up. I said, hey, you know, how would you like to be the company that puts out the first ever Blue Mini action figure? And that's what got the ball rolling. And the next thing you know, I got a contract in hand, and right now we're in the final stages of, you know, production. They sent me the artwork, and I approved everything. I designed everything on it. You know, I said how I wanted
awesome.
It to look.
Yeah.
They did their magic, and it should be, I'm hoping it's out, you know, in time for the Icons convention in April.
Definitely. Speaking briefly, too, on wrestling memorabilia, you recently helped create a crate of wrestling goodness with our friends over at Pro Wrestling Crate. How did you get involved with this company, and how did you choose what went in the blue crate?
Pro Wrestling Crate's a great company. They were once part of Top Rope Tuesday, which was another great concept where they do a T-shirt for a week, and then a while, then they start doing a new T-shirt a day. So, and they're so creative. They said, why not tackle the world of, you know, crates and do a pro wrestling crate? And it's run by a few guys who I've worked with, you know, outside of wrestling as well. And, you know, they said, hey, we would like you to be a part of it. And to be the second one ever behind Mick Foley is such an honor. So, you know, they would throw ideas at me, and I would come back and say, that's great, but how about this? You know, like with the T-shirt design, they sent me a rough draft, and I would give my 2 cents into it, and they would either like it or not, which thankfully they liked it. And, it was probably one of the most well-received the boxes I've seen. So I've gone on YouTube and watched some unboxing videos, and it's a joy to watch people's reactions when they do these unboxing videos and see how they, you know, respond to it in real time.
Definitely.
But Pro Wrestling Crate is phenomenal. I can't wait for the one they did with Kayfabe News was fabulous. The one they did with Mick Foley was tremendous.
Yep.
Yeah, and I'm so excited to see what they do for the 80s.
Definitely. Like we said at the beginning, you know, you're going to be appearing at the arena soon for the Icons of Wrestling on April 16th.
Yeah.
What's your favorite part about these kind of fan conventions as, you know, as a wrestler who's been in the business?
Well, I love these conventions because they don't hurt.
There you go.
I get to meet the fans, and I don't get, you know, slammed or a chair upside the head. But, you know, I'm a fan, you know, at heart. You know, the one thing that it irks me to death is when, you know, it's just somebody goes, all of these marks, these whatever. It's like, you stop.
Yeah, I know.
You got in the business because you're a mark. You work for $20 a night because you're a mark. You put up with half of the crap in this business just because you love what... And being a mark, in the sense that you love what you do. You loved it growing up, and now you get to do it. You should love what you do. You know, if you love it that much, you know, you do it. So I'm a mark. You know, we just happen to get a chance to play for the team. And that's why I like doing these conventions, because you get to interact, you get instant feedback, and I treat these conventions like high school reunions, because, you know, at this point in your career, you never know where you're going to see somebody on another show again. We were doing a bunch of, you know, shows where, you know, it's like ECW heavy talent. You know, people are like, oh, these ECW guys, you know, looking at them, relive their glory. It's like, no, I just wanted to work with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another reason why I like doing these conventions. I get to work with my friends, get to catch up on life. You know, a lot of my friends have kids now, and they're married and stuff like that. And I share my stories and stuff like that. You know, so best of both worlds. You get to see your friends and your fans and have a good time. And then, not to mention, there's also going to be an awesome, House of Hardcore show that night.
Lightning round.
Your favorite Blue song? Is it Blue by Eiffel 65, Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain by Willie Nelson, Blue Christmas by Elvis, or Behind Blue Eyes by The Who?
I'll have to say Blue Christmas by Elvis, because it was my grandma's favorite song, and it's also the song they played when me and Stevie went to Times Square for Christmas as the BWO. So there's that.
All right.
As part of the lightning round, we want you to explain your personal importance to the WCW pay-per-view Halloween Havoc 1990.
Oh, that I'm in the front row for as a fan? was that the one?
That's it, yep.
Yep. I was there, and I think I'm in the front row for that, and I think we chanted at Bader to use it. Steel chair on Nikita Koloff, and he did, and it was craziness.
All right, who was harder to work under, Paul Heyman or Vince McMahon?
Neither were hard to work under, because they gave you opportunity to really do whatever you want, but with Paul Heyman, there's a little bit more fearlessness. I love both, working for both. I'm not, you know, I'll gladly work for him again if I had to do it all over again. But I love the rebellious spirit of ECW. You know, ECW is punk rock. So as much as I loved working for, you know, Vince McMahon and making money, the spirit of ECW was so much fun.
All right. Now, I went to school in Philly. The biggest question in Philly is about cheesesteaks. What's the Blue Meanie? Pat or Geno's? Pat's or Geno's?
If I had to truly pick, I would say Tony Luke's. But if I had to pick between Pat's and Geno's, I would say Geno's, because I've gotten to know the people there, and they've always been very cool to me, and I got the they gave me the special treatment of actually eating inside. I got the time to book and all that stuff. So Geno's gets points for brownie points.
They always say in this business of wrestling, you have many acquaintances, but very few friends. Who's your best friend in the wrestling business?
Oh, best friend in the wrestling business is Al Snow. He's a guy I talk to on a daily basis. And like I said, I wouldn't be here without him. You know, there's plenty of times I wanted to quit, and he talked me off the ledge. And, my second day of, my first day of bumping, I thought to me, he had to get, I was about to, get on my I would get back in my car and drive back to Atlantic City from Ohio. So, but yeah, absolutely, my best friend in this business is Al Snow.
All right, and last but not least, other than wrestling, what is the Blue Meanie passionate about?
Other than wrestling, you said?
Yeah.
My passion is just music. I love wrestling and music.
All right.
Those are two things, you know. If I'm not watching wrestling, I'm listening to music on the radio or watching a concert or something like that. You know, it's great escapism.
Awesome. Now, in this land of social media, where can the fans keep up with you these days?
Besides being on America's Most Wanted, you can find me at Twitter, twitter.com/BlueMeanieBWO. You can find me on my Facebook page at facebook.com/Brian.Heffron, H-E-F-F-R-O-N. Right now I'm at the Mac, so there's a little button where you can click follow, and you can follow me on Facebook. On Instagram, you can find me on Instagram at BlueMeanieBWO. And at Pro Wrestling Tees, that you we've talked about the BWO. If you want a BWO shirt, go to prowrestlingtees.com/BlueMeanie. I got a few other things in the works right now, and they'll be coming out soon. So at a later date, I'll announce that. But if you want to come pester me, I'm just kidding. If you want to come talk to me, that's where you can find me.
Great. Well, Blue Meanie, we thank you so much for joining us today. We'll see you at the Icons of Wrestling on April 16th. Thanks again.
Awesome, and you have a great night, and thanks for getting to meet the great fans at the Icons.
All right. Well, we want to thank the Blue Meanie for coming on and joining us today. A great interview and an even better person.
That's right. And Jonathan, just a little side note for everybody in all seriousness, Brian, the Blue Meanie, he lost his mom recently, and there's actually a GoFundMe page that people started. It's GoFundMe.com/PG3ZERDM. If you head on over to that link, they're raising some money right now to help cover the funeral costs for his mom who recently passed. So if you guys can take a minute out of your day, head on over there, throw a few bucks into this, and just help Brian out. And our condolences go out to him and his family for this.
Promo of the week.
It's a day that I'm certain my guest at this time will not forget. I'm talking about the former Intercontinental Champion of the World, Macho Man Randy Savage.
Nothing means nothing.
Nothing means nothing.
Nothing means nothing. What do you mean by that?
More. I'm talking about all the way to the top, yeah. Unjustifiably in a position that I'd rather not be in. But the cream will rise to the top, oh yeah. Macho Madness, yeah, has got more to offer than President Jack Tunney thinks that I got. Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something right now. Cards stacked against the Macho Man Randy Savage in WrestleMania 3. Yeah, let me say it, yeah. Let me say it out loud, and let me point to the president of the World Wrestling Federation. The Macho Man Randy Savage is not happy with your decision. Yeah, I am the cream in the World Wrestling Federation.
Wait a minute, friend.
And there is no doubt about it. Yeah, you, Mean Gene Okerlund, you know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Wait a minute, though, Randy. I've got to ask you very seriously. Do you blame Mr. Jack Tunney, the distinguished president of the World Wrestling Federation, for Ricky Steamboat being the Intercontinental Champion today?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Outside interference, yeah. In my moment of glory. Yeah, no, I'm living in a nightmare. And I am the cream. And now, not only the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship belt must fall, but the World Heavyweight Championship belt. Because Hulk Hogan, yeah, I am the cream, yeah. The cream of the crop. And there is no one that does it better than the Macho Man Randy Savage. On balance, off balance, doesn't matter. I'm better than you are, yeah. And I'm talking to everyone in the World Wrestling Federation. And I'm even talking to President Jack Tunney. Yeah, I'm on my way. And nothing is going to stop me. Nothing's going to stop me.
You know, just out of curiosity, Randy, and I certainly don't want to diminish your tremendous God-given talents, but I'm very curious. I haven't seen Elizabeth lately.
Yeah, she's on the outside of the ring. Does she interfere in matches? Yeah. Nothing, zero, yeah. Pure athlete, yeah. And I've been, maligned from the top to the bottom. And because they can't handle the macho man, Randy Savage, the cream of the crop. Nobody does it better.
Today's show is brought to you by...
Hey, Jonathan, I know, obviously, you're a big pro wrestling fan. The last time I hung out with you, you had a lot of unique pro wrestling items on you and with you. Where do you get all this merchandise?
Well, Steve, for once in your life, you can be just like me. And all of our listeners out there can be just like me as well. I get my one-of-a-kind wrestling merchandise from ProWrestlingCrate.com. Now, Pro Wrestling Crate is one of the latest crate subscriptions that you can get, but the best part about this is it's so unique and different than any of the other crates that are out there. Each month, they're curated by a wrestler or a certain group involved with wrestling, and everything in the crate kind of revolves around a certain theme. You get shirts, you get buttons, you get pins, you get coasters, you get everything. And most of this stuff is one of a kind. If you don't get it, if you don't subscribe to Pro Wrestling Crate, then you really aren't going to be able to get this stuff. And if you want any more information, be sure to go on over to our friends at Pro Wrestling Crate. You can follow them on Twitter, at PW Crate. They also have an Instagram, who doesn't these days, at Pro Wrestling Crate. And you can go to their website and sign up, which we highly suggest you do, at ProWrestlingCrate.com.
Hey, now I know. All right, guys, check out Mania Crawl this year. If you're headed down to WrestleMania, you're going to want to go to this, especially if you're a pub crawl kind of a fan. So, you know, you've been out drinking or whatnot with your friends, and you did a little pub crawl. Well, this is a Mania Crawl. So during WrestleMania weekend, they're going to be starting in Dallas down there. You can find out all the information on maniacrawl.com. But guys, all the money raised is going to be going towards Connor's Cure and the Children's Hospital. They have an official donation page you can check out at givetochildrens.org. They're also going to be selling Mania Crawl t-shirts via Teespring until February 28th. Teespring kicks back around $6 per shirt, which is also being donated towards Connor's Cure and the Children's Hospital. So be sure to check that out at teespring.com/maniacrawl. And they've also teamed up with Uber. They will be the official designated driver of Mania Crawl 2016. They're going to be creating a code. They'll probably be announcing soon. Make sure you stay tuned to maniacrawl.com. This code will earn new riders their first ride for free up to $20. And every time somebody uses Uber, the promo code, they'll raise $5 towards Connor's Cure and the Children's Hospital as well. So, once again, you're still raising money for a great cause. You can find them on Twitter and Instagram at ManiaCrawl. And you can visit their website at ManiaCrawl.com or even contact them at contact@ManiaCrawl.com. Once again, AWP supports this because it's going to a great cause. So make sure you head on over to ManiaCrawl.com. We talked about some of the worst impersonators, but come on, hit me. Give me some of the best ones. I think that's what we had to get to. That's what people want to hear, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, these are, like I said, some people may think that these are cheesy or whatever, but by far some of my favorite moments in wrestling are good impersonations or good bad impersonations, I should say. But without question, Charlie Haas really ramped it up in his last run with the WWE, and we saw him as the Glamahoss, Charlito, if you will remember some of these. Yeah. He parodied John Cena, JBL, Bret Hart, Mr. Perfect, Hulk Hogan. The list goes on and on and on. So I think it was great. That's when comedy is done right in a wrestling role, and I don't know if Charlie was the one to come up with that or if the writers did or whatever, but regardless, Charlie kind of put his own spin on it and made it his own, and I really, really enjoyed all of Charlie Haas's impersonations.
Yeah, it was the gimmick
of other gimmicks. And I think you can even chalk Damian Sandow up there as kind of like the same thing, what he was doing. And I think even Sandow did a pretty good job of imitating people. It was funny. It had its run, but I think at the end of the day, it can only run a certain extent. You know, this guy's not going to make a 20-year career out of it. But I think for what it was worth with both of these guys, you know, it was hilarious. And I think it was well... It had that place, you know, for that time. So I think it was great for both of these guys.
Yeah, now, Steve, I mentioned Charlie Haas. You brought up Damian Sandow. Is there anybody else in the past that you kind of really enjoyed their impersonations?
Dude, going back, you know, he was a guest on the show. I got to bring this guy up. Jason Sensation. You might know him as portraying Owen Hart in the DX Nation of Domination parody. When I first saw this guy, you know, he was obvious that he wasn't a wrestler, so I was like, well, who is this? Well, what is he doing? I want to hear him talk. And as soon as he opened his mouth of I'm not a nugget, you know, and just copying Owen Hart, it was just so hilarious. I wanted to know more about this guy. And he actually ended up having a little bit of a career after that with the WWE and whatnot. So I think that was one of the most memorable non-wrestlers to ever impersonate somebody that they did on like Raw or TV or whatnot. It was just hilarious. And if you guys haven't had a chance to listen to Jason on our show, make sure you head on over to anotherwrestlingpodcast.com, or you can check out the interview on YouTube, youtube.com/anotherwrestlingpod. Hilarious. I can't wait to have him back on the show. Jonathan, I can't speak enough about Jason Sensation.
Yeah, he is a great dude, and everybody go out there and check out Jason Sensation. But the one that really, it was more of a storyline, and this is what I was saying earlier, it really added another layer, and I think that was the CM Punk when he portrayed a Jeff Hardy not too long ago. And, you know, this really was great. I really appreciate what they were doing with this. It was kind of straight edge versus Jeff Hardy, and, you know, CM Punk came out, looked pretty much identical to Jeff Hardy. It was hard to tell the difference. And then once again, CM Punk kind of made fun of the fact that Jeff Hardy was no longer with the company. And I thought it was done brilliantly. And like I said, it doesn't always have to be comedy. This one can be very real and part of a very cool and gritty storyline.
That's right. And Jonathan, speaking of some of the best ones, we didn't even talk about it, but we just talked to him. The BWO, Jonathan, when this happened in ECW, when you first saw it, you knew what they were doing. You knew that it was obviously an NWO parody, but I don't know. What was your first impression of this? Because it was just ridiculous. And these guys even eventually turned this out to great careers for all three of them, even extending into the WWE from this.
Yeah, you know, they're three guys. They may have not really been doing all that great on their own, you know, separately. Whether they were thrown together or whether they said, hey, we've got an idea, and Paul Heyman said, shoot, go for it, you know, whatever. The whole was better than the parts, I think. I think that they played off of each other. You know, Stevie Richards, Nova, and Blue Meanie all were great in their roles as, you know, they parodied the NWO, the original NWO, very well, and I appreciated the parody, and I don't know that Nash, Hall, and Hogan did, but I think that it's one of those parodies that stand the test of time even to this day.
Yeah, man, it was great, because it was like, it's a parody, but it wasn't like, you know, the old world order or something. You know, it was like, it was a world order, but they just made it blue. You know, it was just ridiculous. It was definitely thinking outside the box of how could we imitate this great thing happening right now in WCW and just kind of like come up with their own little shtick on it. And, you know, it was great. I don't know. It was probably one of my favorites out of all these that we were talking about tonight. But I mean, it's definitely great talking about the best of these, because, you know, some of those other ones we talked about earlier in the show, the horrible ones, it was like, they were funny, but they weren't as standout as these that we're talking about right now, for sure.
Yeah, you know, obviously we can't have this topic without talking about D-Generation X. Whether it was the kind of old D-Generation X making fun of the Nation of Domination, which we talked about earlier with Jason Sensation, or You know, in the 2000s when DX kind of made fun of Vince and Shane, Sean and Triple H, I think that they kind of always had a good idea of how to do a parody, to make it serious but not that serious, and to make it funny and ridiculous. And I will always remember the, you know, Shawn Michaels as Shane McMahon. He had that ridiculous wig on and he was dancing around the ring, and Triple H was Vince and told him to stop it or whatever in his Vince voice, and Shawn flopped on his back. I thought it was hilarious. Yeah, and I think that's what I'm saying. Professional wrestling is entertainment, and this is how you get some of this great entertainment, because some of these guys will surprise you. You know, if you watch the Stone Cold podcast with Big Show, you saw him do not only an impersonation of Hulk Hogan, but he did one as Stone Cold as well. And, you know, I think there's definitely room in the world of professional wrestling for these sorts of, you know, funny little impersonations.
That's right. You know, at the end of the day, you know, it's sports, it's entertainment, and, you know, it's entertaining to get made fun of a little bit and have some fun with it and enjoy it, because, you know, we're all thinking about some of the stuff that they were doing, especially with the whole Nation parody and, you know, all these guys. It's just funny to get, you know, have this little bubble of entertainment where they're making fun of each other within it. It's just fun to watch. It's entertainment at the end of the day, and that's what makes the world go round in the world of professional wrestling, right?
That's right, Steve. And you mentioned it earlier. If you are new to another wrestling podcast, or you want to go back and listen to any of our episodes, check us out on anotherwrestlingpodcast.com. You can find all our social media on there. We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube. We're on Instagram. We really are taking over the world of social media. No pun intended to the Blue World Order here, but we are taking over, and we want to thank you all for listening today. We've got a lot of great things coming up, Steve, and we are well on our way to 100 episodes of this podcast.
That's right. So if you want to leave us a message, to call the AWP hotline, 802-297-7672. That's 802-AWP-7672. Cut a promo. Leave us a message. Tell us what you love. Tell us what you hate. Tell us anything. We'll play the best calls on each show. And for another wrestling podcast, I'm Jonathan Benjamin.
Oh, my God. This isn't going to happen. I see what you did there.
I don't know.
And I'm Steve Credo.
Till next time.
Another wrestling podcast.